Helping your child with mood issues. We all have moods. How do you know if your child's moods are an issue or just a mood? Well, one thing is that moods, by their definition, pass, right? They're just a mood. They come and they go. An overall, well-adjusted, happy child who's in a bad mood today may be in that mood because he's suffered some disappointment or because he didn't have enough sleep. Or maybe he's even coming down with an illness. So those kinds of moods are not what we're talking about today. We're talking about chronic mood issues. So that really the word mood issue, and the focus is on issue here, is the thing that the parent must deal with. If you're living with a child who is chronically irritable, aggressive, grumpy, negative, you know what a mood issue really is. Interestingly, in children, depression is thought to be expressed as a grumpy, miserable mood that occurs most of the time. And when the child becomes older, sometimes in the late teens or in the 20s, the depression takes on a different look, so that irritability is eventually replaced with a sadder kind of manifestation. And sometimes that doesn't really happen till the mid-20s or later, so that even people up to the early 20s can still be irritable as a manifestation of a low mood. And that's a genetically inherited condition. So low mood people often start off that way in infancy, just miserable babies who have trouble being soothed, and they persist in childhood as cranky kids who aren't flexible, they don't adjust well to change, they're unhappy with almost everything, with their clothes, with their food, with their siblings, with you, and it just goes on and on that way. And of course, there are plenty of things that happen in every child's life that children just don't like and are not happy with, like dinner really doesn't appeal to them a lot of the time, and neither does breakfast or lunch. You know, there's really problems that they have to deal with. The teacher really is mean, or the kids really have been teasing and so on. The siblings do take their stuff without permission, and things really do happen. But for some children, all of those kinds of life events just roll off their back. And for the moody child, the one who's got a mood issue, all of those same minor things can be major catastrophes, so that every little bump becomes a huge mountain. Mood issues are sometimes flavored a little bit differently. Instead of grumpy and irritable, we can have an anxiously disturbed child, so one who is afraid to go to sleep at night or in her room alone, or is afraid to go to the party, or afraid to, you know, to cross the road, or afraid, has a different kind of mood issue. I mean, these kids might grow up later to be diagnosed with anxiety-based disorders. So the only reason I mention it here is because anxious mood and sad mood or mad mood often go together. So that when a person has mood issues, they may have a mixture of different kinds of not happy affect. Now, when people get a little bit older, sadness becomes more of a clear mood where people may find themselves crying for no reason, or, you know, mopey, withdrawn, and actually have feelings like life is dreary, there's nothing good, it's maybe not even worth living. Teenagers can have very heavy moods where they're actually suffering from a case of major depression. And you can tell sometimes because they're isolating themselves. They're no longer interested in contacting their friends, even on text messaging, or, you know, emails or iMessages or all that stuff. They're just not interested. They're lying in their bed looking at the ceiling for long periods of time. They're not functioning well in school. They don't care. They're not trying. Or they may be working very, very hard and still functioning okay on the academic end while they're not functioning well on the social end. And again, they may have intense anxiety combined with that. And a lot of mental health diagnoses actually exist in pairs or in triplets with other diagnoses, so that if the child is already an adolescent and is suffering, let's say at age 17, from an eating disorder and maybe an obsessive compulsive disorder, they may also have a mood disorder that accompanies that. And unfortunately, it is not unusual to have three such disorders coexisting, or they're called comorbid. And in the littler kids, the precursors for those conditions are seen. So they won't necessarily be diagnosed with all of that, but their behavior may be bad, like they may get into trouble at school, or they may be, because of being explosive or being angry or being antagonistic or rude to the teacher or something like that, but they may also be very, very anxious at the same time, like I mentioned before. And they may be overweight, you know, maybe eating too much. So you see like the little precursors of things that may come later. You can identify them if you know what to look for. Basically, if the child that you're raising is happy-go-lucky, well, you and that child have been blessed, okay? The purely happy, positive outlook is the rarest constant mood. Yeah, I don't know, if you look around on a bus or you see what people look like walking down the street, you don't see too many who are brightly smiling as they're going, just radiating the joy of living. You know, most people look stressed. So children are also suffering stress, and they have academic problems, you know, teachers and schoolwork, and they have sibling problems, and they have social peer problems, and they have parent problems. So, you know, they have their problems, and they have what to be stressed about, and they're not all laughing and bubbling and joking all the time, although they tend to have a more positive affect than adults do. they're still going to have a good time. Some of us forget how to do that. But again, that moody child is having a lot more trouble having that good time. And there are things that you as a parent can do to help your child find a more comfortable, constant mood. So that's what we're going to look at today, just some of the things that we can do. First, let's look at what makes the mood worse, okay? Because if you stop doing those things, then you're halfway there, right? So stress in the home really does worsen a child's mood, and if the child is vulnerable, that is, moody to begin with, then it's especially important for the parents to reduce stress in the home by reducing their overt conflict. Okay, don't fight with your spouse. That's the short way of saying it. Don't argue and fight and squabble, because that's very hard for all children to take, but especially for mood disordered kids. And don't yell at the kids, because a lot of anger really worsens all conditions, all mental health conditions. Anger, unfortunately, is a toxic emotion, one that the Torah says, you know, we should just stay far away from. Everything else we want to be sort of in the middle path, but when it comes to anger, you want to remove it as far as possible from your repertoire of expressed emotions. So when I say expressed, I mean you may feel irritated yourself, right? And if you have a mood disordered child, it's quite likely that either you or your spouse is mood disordered as well, because that condition is genetically inherited. So it could be that, you know, you also have a temper, or you're also miserable and negativistic and grumpy, or your spouse is, or his mother is, or, you know, somebody in the family is probably. And you may have to work hard to fake it, let's say, in front of your children, so that you are not looking and walking yourself as if life is just one big, miserable, suffering, horrible thing that must be endured. There's the model of mood that you are demonstrating. So, you know, you could ask yourself, well, how happy do I look? You know, and it's pretty hard for us, because our happiest hours are spent away from our kids. If you have a school-age child, your child is happiest during 9 o'clock in the morning till, let's say, 4 o'clock, before they come home. And you're also happiest during those hours, usually. So, you know, the stressful hour was getting out the door in the morning, and the stressful hours, again, are at home at night with all those duties and responsibilities that all of the family members have. But those hours in between, we spend with like-minded company sometimes, doing things that we enjoy sometimes, away from the pressures of home. And therefore, our family usually sees us at our worst. We all come together at the end of the day tired, exhausted from the day's events and pressured for the evening's events. How pleasant are you during that time? Okay. What are you modeling? Have you got a big smile on your face, not just when the kids walk in the door, but like an hour later and 2 hours later and 3 hours later, are you still smiling? Well, it would be great if we could be aware of the impact of our mood. You're sitting at the dinner table and complaining to your spouse about all the things that went wrong in your day, and listening to your spouse complain about all the things that went wrong in his day. This is a horrible way to educate your children. Or it's saying things that are really depressing to your kids about just expressing negative thoughts, expressing negative beliefs and negative complaints about everything, just talking negatively about the weather, about how awful the city is that you live in, about how awful the community is that you live with, about how terrible the leaders are, about just on and on with complaints and negativity. It's like feeding poison along with the main course at dinner. So I would say make it a rule to speak about positive things, about positive actions that you know people have taken, even if it was to eradicate a negative problem. For example, there are people who take up a cause and they raise money or they start rallies or they are political activists. Holding up images of positive action for your children as opposed to helpless victimization, which is a very poor model for mood because, it's that feeling that we can't do anything about our situation that really is so depressing. Whereas if you can tell the story at dinner time of one person each night, okay, well, even one a week would be great, of somebody who did something about a situation. They started a fund. They opened a charity. They investigated a cure. They changed a policy. They did something. And, in the library, there are actually books about kids, little 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 15-year-olds who do huge politically activist type activities to change the world. And, showing your kids that there are things that each individual can do is terrific for their mood. It's good for their inspiration. It shows them that there are things that can be done. We are not helpless victims. So talk positive and look positive, sound positive, and reduce the conflict. And that's going to help. That's going to help. Okay. It won't cure your mood disordered child's mood, because the mood itself is mostly a product of the genes, right? So it's kind of set kind of low, but it will not worsen the condition. And unfortunately, it's very easy for parents to worsen the condition by creating stress themselves, like I said, by yelling, by fighting, by conflict and negativity. So you definitely want to avoid that. Even diet can affect mood. So you can do some research on this yourself. I'm not going to give, because there's so many different opinions about how diet can affect mood, but I'll just say a few things by way of example. They say that essential fatty acids are deficient in everybody's diet these days, but that some brains take the news worse than others. So the mood-disordered brain is extremely sensitive to the deprivation of essential fatty acids. And when you add essential fatty acids to the diet in a person who is suffering from mood disorders, their mood perks up dramatically. Essential fatty acids are contained naturally in fish oils and in flaxseed and a bunch of other products. But they are also added to products these days, so that you can even buy orange juice with essential fatty acids added to it. You can buy those in tablets that people take in, teenagers and adults can swallow those big tablets that they sell in the health food stores. But they also make special tablets and powders for children. So if you do a little research, you might be able to find that and supplement your child's diet with those essential fatty acids. It's simply a nutritional product. It doesn't, it's not a drug or a medicine or anything like that. It's just something that it's hard to get enough of in today's diet, especially if your kids don't enjoy fish that much. So that's one example. Another example of food affecting diet is the negative effect of mood on negative effect of food on mood, let's put it that way. So a diet that's high in sugar or certain chemicals and colors and so on, and let's say alcohol, those kinds of things can increase negative mood, adding to anger, impulsivity, just general unpleasantness, you know, in the mood, and depression on top of that. Especially when a kid is having a lot of sugar, their mood can be quite depressed because sugar causes something called the sugar blues. I think there's a book by that title that you can look up. So trying to replace that with substitutes, perhaps like stevia, or that's a natural herb that's very, very sweet and available in your health food stores and so on. It's also available in the regular supermarket. And low glycemic index sweeteners like agave, which is, I think it's derived from the cactus plant. It's like a syrup that has a very nice flavor, but it doesn't have the problems that to the brain and to the body that regular sugars and sweeteners, even like honey, have. So it's a very good product that you might investigate. And, of course, try taking, you know, a lot of the junk food out of the diet of your child, and mood might just improve from that to a certain extent, right? So you can talk to your naturopath about designing a mood-friendly diet and see if you notice any results. And we don't want to deprive anybody of good food, so we have to do it in a proper way that everything tastes good, you know, and is appealing. That might take a little bit of research on your part. Now, playing very upbeat music in the background of your home life can replace the yelling that we talked about a little while ago. Take that yelling out and put some beautiful music in, and you'll be surprised to notice that the music can relax and uplift all the members of your house, including yourself, which is really nice. So even as background music, it doesn't have to be stuff that's blaring, you know, in the foreground, but there are certain kinds of music that have been designed to specifically affect mood. Again, you can ask a naturopath for a list of such music. So you can sometimes find these on the internet. There's a resource of uplifting music designed specifically for that purpose. So you can look into that, and they're just very quiet but mood balancing or energy balancing types of productions that you can find. And, you know, for kids also, especially little kids, even the regular, you know, loud and sort of unpleasant children's music will at least give them a upbeat kind of atmosphere in the house. And that's, again, beats the yelling and the conflict and all that stuff. So you can, if you don't want to go for the designer energy relaxers, you can certainly go for the regular children's lyrics that are quite upbeat as well. Making sure that your child is not sleep deprived is very helpful in helping him to maintain a decent mood. Again, these are, even if we are mood challenged by birth, there are things that make it worse. So being sleep deprived is one of those things, and you want to help your child just go to bed on time. Now, a lot of people who have mood issues have trouble sleeping. It's a kind of unfair twist here, but they can never fully recover because their system is just wired in such a way that they're tossing and they're turning and they're getting up, and they're getting up early and they're falling asleep late, and they really have a lot of trouble. Sometimes a herbalist can prescribe a child-friendly tea that is something that is healthy, or even in the flavor of lollipops or drops. So there's different ways to get herbs into the system. But herbs can be very good relaxants to help a child fall asleep and stay asleep for the whole night. An aromatherapist will use not herbs, but they'll use essential oils to attain the same purpose. And you could investigate with both of those things, even knowing how to make a little sleep pillow, which is a pillow that you stuff with sleeping herbs. Well, you can learn about this even from books from the library. And just sew up a little square of cotton and stuff it with some herbs, and I'm talking about something about 2 inches by 2 inches, or an inch by an inch, well, I guess 2 inches would be, you know, and the child could sniff that. But again, you want to learn which herbs are okay, so especially for children, so you can look that up in books or consult a herbalist, a professional herbalist, because herbs are powerful and they're wonderful, but they are medicinal, and you want to make sure that you're using the right ones in the right way for your children. So, you know, having a sleep routine, also helping your children to settle down and fall asleep at the same time every day and get up at the same time every day, putting some regularity into their system, can help with the mood. So we've got a low-stress home environment, we've got some pleasant music, we've got some help towards staying asleep, taking that very seriously about getting asleep and staying asleep. So, and whatever you need to do with the help of whatever professional you need to get that going can make a very big difference in mood. Now, there are also lifestyle considerations for mood, such as making sure that there is some opportunity to socialize, because spending time with friends is a stress buster. It really makes people feel that life is worth living and that there are good things if you can arrange for your child to do some activity outside the house, perhaps once a week or something, as part of a team or as part of a club or as part of an activity. And this is assuming that the child doesn't have some friend that he just wants to go visit. If he has, you know, people who he can see, then encourage socialization for kids who are mood disordered. They will benefit from this at every age, and especially as children become adolescents, you know, they need to spend time with people. As a child isolates more and more, the risk of falling into deeper and deeper levels of depressed mood increases. You don't want isolation going on. But now, you can't make a 17-year-old get out and spend time with their friends. But, you know, if the child's a little bit younger, you can help organize things. With a 17-year-old, you can just keep your eye on it and notice that if isolation is happening, it's one of the symptoms that you'll want to discuss with the child's doctor when you get to, you know, we'll get to that point, because, we'll hold off on that for a minute, but, you know, basically you can't make anybody want to spend time with friends. So if you can encourage it, go ahead. Exercise and movement is very good for mood. It's fantastic for mood. If you have a child who's always in a low mood, if you could sign that child up for some kind of sports education, sports team membership, karate classes, anything to keep moving, you'll find that movement works as well as a drug to the brain. And that has been covered in a fair amount of research, so that people who have low mood just do so well when they are getting enough energized movement into their systems. And that could be through sports or through a personal trainer with exercise. So, you know, that's another thing, that don't let the kids, if possible, don't let them sit for hours at a time in front of a computer or in front of anything. But they should get up and move. If the only thing they can do is walk to and back from school, or even, I don't know what, walk up and down your stairs in your house many times to get you things or whatever, keep them moving, because movement, energized movement, can help. Now, you want to show kids how to soothe and comfort themselves, and teach them that when there is a low mood, there are things that you can do to raise that mood. Okay, we don't have to just be in a bad mood. And we can use, with little kids, we can certainly teach them about comforting themselves tucking themselves in with a nice blanket, a book, something comforting to eat. And it should be, don't encourage the sweets for this, but, you know, it could be a banana, that kind of thing. And maybe read a story to your bear, you know, when you're feeling really sad, because your bear likes that, you know, that sort of thing. Or have a bath with lots of bubbles when you're feeling kind of crummy, and just let the water soak away the bad feeling, and you can play in the tub. And talk about this with kids, that there are things that we can do to change our mood. Now, there are also naturopathic treatments that we can use to change our mood. For example, Bach flower therapy is specifically for emotions that are out of balance. And you can talk to, again, a naturopath or a Bach flower practitioner. Bach is spelled B-A-C-H, named after Dr. Bach, who was a very sensitive person. He could feel the vibrations and energies of flowers. And his form of treatment is called vibrational medicine. So it's not like herbal medicine, which is truly medicinal, but it's something that works on the field, so to speak, the mind around a person. And there are some people who just don't believe that anything like this could work, because it's basically water. But you know, you have to see it for yourself to see whether it works for your child. So there's enough people who've been using it since the 1930s that do feel that this particular treatment works extremely well. And I myself am a big fan of it because I've seen it work, you know, very, very, very well for all kinds of people. And it's harmless. Even a pregnant person or a nursing mother, whatever, could use this. Anybody who could use water safely could use Bach flowers safely. But do your own research and consult your own practitioner. But you will find that in that system of healing, whatever is causing the low mood is treated specifically, and then that mood improves not only in the short run, but over the long run of the person's life. So that is a nice thing to experiment with, and it's very cheap and easy and so on. So you could look into that as well. So we've got various interventions, but the idea is that as a parent, you would not stand by and just throw your hands up in the air and say, oh, you know, this kid is just so miserable, I can't take it. Okay, no. The kid is so miserable, the child cannot take it. And the child needs your help. The child needs your help in learning how to manage his moods. So especially a kid who gets explosive or gets all wound up and he just can't calm himself down, showing him, for example, how to use Bach flowers can be one way where he knows he can do something for himself. Showing him how to take a bath or even a shower to let the water run down and drain out all the bad energy can be very helpful to him. Letting him know that you're always there to talk to when the mood is bad, and that he can, you know, say whatever he wants that's making him unhappy, and that you will listen and reflect it back using the technique called emotional coaching, which is there's a podcast we did on this earlier on naming a child's feelings, but just to be able to acknowledge the frustration or the irritation or whatever it is that the child is feeling. That's basically what a psychotherapist would do for him as well. And you're teaching him, when you have a problem, don't isolate yourself and just, you know, kick the wall, but come and talk, and you will find that there are people there to rub your back and to name your feelings and to let you sort of work it out of your system by the talking cure. So, and then sometimes, of course, there'll be some problem solving that you're going to want to do with the child after you've named emotions, not right away, but after. So you name the feelings, and as the feelings begin to, you know, lessen, and the child is getting calmer, then you can begin to problem solve and see how you can prevent the situation or solve the situation that he's talking about. So showing him that you're there, showing him that you take care of your own moods, that you comfort yourself, that you make sure you do things that are fun sometimes, that make you laugh, that you read funny books that make you laugh out loud, or watch funny movies. Do something, you know, on purpose that makes you laugh, and that you can do it on purpose to change your mood. Okay, you want to teach him that, yeah, our moods come, but we can deal with them in different ways. We can, if the mood is a bad one, there are things we can do to move it to the side and to try and bring some good energy into our system. Sometimes just massaging a child, you know, can help, again, get that negativity out of him. So hand massage and foot massage, sometimes called reflexology, can change mood dramatically and has been used as an intervention for negative moods. So you can take your child to a professional reflexologist and get that mood addressed that way, or you can learn a little bit about that technique yourself from all the self-help books available. And you yourself give your child a hand massage or a foot massage, and people of all ages, of course, love that. Or a foot bath. Again, when we're feeling not so good, you want to show your child, here, you can intervene. Don't just put up with that feeling. Now, if the child is really, you know, in a bad state, and the kid is even, you know, under the age of 10 or something, you can take this child to a play therapist. Most of young children's therapy is not based around talking. It's based around artwork sometimes or playing, different kinds of therapies that, you know, are suitable for children. And then as the child is an adolescent, there are more choices in therapies, so lots more choices, and your child should be an active consumer with you, making sure that the experience of therapy, if the child needs therapy, is a positive one. That is, the child feels that it's helpful and that she wants to go to it and she's benefiting and she likes the therapist and all that stuff. So that would be important also. How do you know if your child needs a therapist? Well, you've tried all these other little things, you know. These are, you know, you've lowered the stress in your home, you've brought in the good music, you're encouraging an active lifestyle, you've introduced Bach flowers, you're listening and you're communicating and you're rubbing hands and feet and maybe even a neck, and you're showing the child how to comfort herself, etc., and it's just not kicking in. It's not making a difference. Well, you know, then you want to definitely get that child professional help. And that's part of your job, to identify that the child needs the professional help, that the child is not thriving. And, you know, I've certainly met adolescents who just were they felt so abandoned that they had been miserable for 2 years and nobody in their house even noticed or commented. And sometimes parents take that route because they sort of figure, well, I don't want to bring it to anybody's attention. And if I don't talk about it, then it's not really there. Or I don't want to make it worse by highlighting it. And I'm sure it's just a passing phase and all teenagers are like this. So, you know, it'll go away soon. None of that is true, right? So depression or real unhappiness in a teenager is not normal. It's not a passing phase. It won't necessarily go away soon. So you should intervene at the earliest possible time to offer your child professional counseling. Sometimes it takes a long time to get to the professional counselor, especially to one that the child likes. So, you know, don't wait, because you don't want to wait till it's a crisis that requires, heaven forbid, hospitalization. Right? You just want to help that child find a way to manage his or her stress and his or her moods, which they may have to do throughout lifetime, because if they've got those genes, then the challenge may be to keep on top of one's mental health situation all through the life, so that the condition does not get out of bounds. So a little bit of low mood is okay, but too much low mood is not okay, and you want to help your kid as much as possible. So there are some things that we can do. What we can't do is, you know, make a moody child just whoop, happy. The child is still going to be himself with his own personality, just his best self. And really, that's all we can possibly ask for. Just one other thought I wanted to say also before we close off, and it's not really a thought to end on, but I forgot to say it earlier, so we're going to end on it, okay? Sometimes children of every age, you know, even five-year-olds, will say they don't want to live anymore. They hate life and they don't want to live anymore. Now, parents can get quite frightened when they hear a child say this, but you have to look at the whole picture. If the child is saying that because that's her way of saying she's really mad and really upset about something, and she's like, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 years old, and otherwise there are no symptoms that you see, it's just that she didn't get what she wanted, and she's, you know, she's trying this out once or twice, you can simply rephrase that for the child. You can say like, oh, that's so it's so bad that you don't have this thing that you want, whatever it is. It just makes you feel like everything is bad. It's just so bad. And if the child says yes, then then you can just go from there trying to solve the problem of how we're going to get the thing that she wants, when we might get it later, or just acknowledging that sometimes it's so disappointing. And you're really going to help her change her wording, basically, from "I don't want to live anymore" to "I'm really disappointed that I can't have what I want. It makes me very sad." So sometimes that's all that's really happening there, is the child does not have the right words to describe a really bad feeling on the inside. But at other times, a child who says that really is serious and is not happy and really, really is looking at, is thinking about suicide as an option. Now, usually people are saying when they talk in that way is that they're in horrible pain and they don't know how to get out of it. If a parent can just name the feelings back a few times without panicking, like you don't want to just jump there and go, "Don't ever talk like that. You know that's a sin. Don't ever say anything like that." You know, that's not an answer to that kind of talk from a child. But again, to reflect back the emotions, you're just so desperate. You just don't know where to turn anymore. You just don't see a way out. And to put it in different words, right? Because we're going to move that thought to, there are always solutions. There are always things that can be done. We just have to go through the trouble of finding them, right? That may be an educational statement that comes later. Now, it's not up to you to solve the depth of a problem like that. Just get your child to a professional therapist. But you may be the first person who hears this kind of sentiment from your child. So you do have to know how to name the feelings back to the child and see whether it's reflecting just a minor frustration with the wrong words or a major life crisis, again, with the wrong words and wrong thought pattern, but in you know, something that definitely needs help of a professional nature. So, but don't be afraid, because your job is to be there for your child, no matter what your child says. So all you have to do is reflect what your child is saying back to him or her using name the feelings, go slowly, listen, take the child seriously, and arrange for help, right? So that's it. And hopefully, using all of these strategies, you will help your child to maintain their best mood, whatever that is.